Hi, welcome. This is Dr. John DeMartini. This is one of the most amazing and inspiring shows that you can listen into. If you want to be on the edge of your seats, if you want to open up your heart, if you want to expand your mind, and you want to meet incredible people, stay tuned because you're just about to experience a transformative radio show that will change your life. And you're listening to the Dr. Pat Show is coming up right next.
Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show, talk radio to thrive by. Powerful, inspiring, and coming to you live, bringing you stories of people like you and me, busting through and living life full out. Get ready to dare to wonder what your life would be like if you knew you could not fail.
Hey, everybody. Welcome. It's so great to have all of you tune us in and turn us on. You know, we were talking about resilience in the last show. And it's one thing to talk about resilience. It's another thing to live it day by day. I read a book recently, and I asked if Norman could join us here today, Norman McCombs. Because when I read through his book, and then I started to look at the life of somebody so dedicated and committed to not just understanding the power of resilience, but understanding what it means to be that person that stands up, to be that person that moves forward, to be that person that could write about the most extraordinary journey, the most incredible and painful moments of a life, and come out on the other side as you watch him standing outside the East Wing of the White House before receiving the National Medal of Technology from President Obama. And so this is it. This is it. The question that he asks himself and the question that we all ask ourselves is, how did we come from the circumstances of birth, steps in the White House to the president? How did we get from that place, our history, to moments that we reflect on and call extraordinary? But today, we're going to take you on a journey. We're going to take you on a journey that comes from a very heart open place. And yet it begins with a conversation about what it means to connect with our lineage, what it means to understand what depression really is, what it means to go through life and just watch and lose those close to us. But this is more than any of that. As Norman will quote, we are more than our bloodlines. It is so absolutely relevant. But beyond all that, this is somebody to listen to understand how to truly navigate in the times that we're in. Norman, it's so great to have you here. Welcome.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for the kind words. Nice to see you again.
Nice to see you again. I am even more aware of the journey, and I'm more aware of your journey and your ability to take this journey and put it out there. A reason to be is a novel, you know, but it is so brilliantly and visually beautiful. And what I mean by that is it is for people that read it, they know that it is much more than some fiction. They know that there's something in here that is so heart-centered that it has to be more than whatever they think it is. I want to talk about this novel. I want to talk about for a minute, you know, the heart opening that you had to get to this place to write this. What was the journey for you? What was it that called you to say, I need to share this with people?
Well, from a young boy, I liked to write, but I got off into away from that and got into science and engineering, and that became my career path. Always intending to go back to writing. I wrote a great deal of most, you know, technical things over my life. And I got to a point where I thought maybe I'd start doing it. My dear wife, Grace, contracted Alzheimer's. I wouldn't admit it. I spent years as a solo caregiver, and I felt that there had to be an answer, and I just kept searching. And when I found out, finally came to terms with it, that it just wasn't going to happen. I went into deep depression, and it was very, so at that point it became hard. My reason to be during those first few years was grace. I gave up virtually everything. Mm. And when I gave up hope, then it sent me into depression, and I got up every morning. I cared for her, and as it gradually saw her slip away from me, I went into deeper and deeper depression. But I wouldn't ask for help. I didn't want to admit it. Finally, I couldn't function any longer, so I had to call for help, and that was the worst day of my life that I had to give up and get help from others.
Yeah, it is tough.
Thank God for those others. They kept me alive.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you about that, because there are moments that we get to where we cross, right? There's a crossroads we get to where most of us that have been so independent in our lives, we've always been able to get through many things. You're highly successful out in the world. And the idea that you would be faced with something, a situation where you came to a crossroads and could not do it alone, that moment to ask for help, that had to be such a transformative moment for you.
I could not, couldn't get out of bed one morning. I just couldn't function. I'm typically 230 pounds, 6 foot two. I was down under 180 pounds, wasn't eating. And I physically found myself unable to care for her. And so I had to call for help. And I did. And thank goodness. A lot of people say it's in your lifetime, you're thankful to accumulate, you know, one good friend. The cream came to the top. I had so many people surround me at that time, and it saved me. I wish I had, the advice I have for others is to ask for help early on.
Yeah, you and me.
I was arrogant. I felt that I could do it. I've been solving problems all my life, and this was another, and I wasn't willing to give up on it. And there's highs and lows of it. You read about this, you read about that, you try this, you try that, and you have hope. And it, after a while, I just couldn't, I gave up hope. And literally, you know, I gave Grace the name Hope in the book. And so it's appropriate, because I finally had to give her up, you know, to others. And I pretty much fell apart for a while. I consider myself strong intellectually and physically, but emotionally, not so much. To be able to handle it, I couldn't. I just fell apart, and others had to help me, and it humbled me. Mm-hmm. I kept on thinking that somehow I was missing something, that there'd be something, you know, that's happening out there that I didn't know about, some progress. So I, as a scientist, I just dug, and tried, and still very little progress made with it. And you learn how to deal with it. You don't ask questions of people like that. You give them answers. You guide them. You hold them. You know, so make them feel secure. If you put yourself in their shoes, it's a little dangerous, because they're not feeling the same emotion as you. And if you treat them just in a normal fashion, asking them questions, trying to discuss things with them, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
And you have to come to terms with that.
I was reading in your book, and I just want to give people a sense of this. I went back and you start to share things. And I just want to just give people a sense of this, because this is really the unspoken word when you take the journey, Norman, that you took. It's this. She had always been so young and vibrant. How could so much change so quickly? How could everything they had together have simply slipped away into the ether? I mean, these are the questions that people have and rarely state. And you take us on this journey that not just asks those questions, but you share in what it's like to walk that walk, you know, to really say to folks, you know, what is this? How am I to be? You know, I'm a technological genius, but how am I to be? And I want to ask you, as you reflect on this, and especially in writing the novel, right? You know, when you reflect on it, what comes to mind as you look back now and you think, I want to share this with other people. I want them to know ... this.
The writing of the book was something that I had intended to do for years because I read a lot about my ancestors. I was basically going to write about them. When my life fell apart, I didn't think about that any longer. My reason to be was grace, to care for in every way possible. I gave up everything that in my career. And,
I know this is tough.
When I lost her, it was, I lost my reason to be.
Yeah.
Because that's what it had come down to.
Yeah.
I had friends, one in particular, that reminded me about my desire to write eventually. And he got me out and going, and I got some help doing that. And he got me interested. One of the reasons it interested me was maybe there was something back there in my heritage that I could draw upon, you know, get some strength that others... Where did I come from? I think we all have that, especially as we get older, where did we come from, right?
Yeah.
And so that took my mind off things, and I got help. And as you read in the book, I had a particular person that helped me on the journey. So writing the book, I would say, to a certain degree, it was... Hang on just a minute. I'm having lighting difficulty. Okay, thank you. I need a producer here.
Yeah, don't worry. We could take care of it on our end.
One that's not off painting their bedroom or whatever. So as I got into it, you know, I thought it was therapeutic. That came from others. You know, they said that more of this is. It'd be therapeutic for you to do this, distract you. But then I wanted others to understand, you know, that it was possible to come out of it. It was possible to survive it. Because for a long time, I had no interest in surviving, none. So the book pretty much consists of three parts. One is my survival. You know, it starts out with my Scottish heritage, and then it's me coming alive again, awakening and getting into the search about my ancestors. And along the way, one of my goals was to search for the meaning of love, because along the way, you hear this word used so between strangers. You know, you say, love you. You know, they never say, I love you. You know, to me, that's important.
It is very important.
And people throw that word around. And one of the things I wanted to do and I attempted to do from a scientist point of view is sort of define love. True love, a true bond. And what is it? Are you willing to give your life up for someone? Yes. Okay. I don't mean just emotionally, but physically, to give yourself up. So that kind of love, I think, is a form of energy. Second law of thermodynamics. You know, you can't destroy energy. I think of it as a form of energy. It never goes away. And so over the years, I've tried to suppress the memories because they make me, even the good memories depress me sometimes. So I've learned to deal with that.
Yeah.
Not completely. I don't think you're, Pat, I don't think you're meant to forget it.
You know, no, I don't think so.
It's not moral to forget it. Those are things you're supposed to remember. The people only live in your memory. Right? How else? When and so I wrote the book for therapeutic reasons, but I really wanted to get that message out that you're able to survive it if you just keep going. Keep active. Ask for help. I have never gone to a support group or anything like that, but I believe that probably would be helpful. I'm sort of a Ayn Rand kind of guy, you know, independent, thinking I can handle everything. But I ran into a brick wall in this one. Mm. I mentor a lot of young people, and I always tell them, you know, if you're running a stone wall, either knock it down or go around it. You know, and it's not possible in a situation like this. You absorb it.
Yep.
And hopefully your character can carry you on, and you'll survive it and not take the easy way out. But,
Norman.
And I'm not a drink. I don't drink. I don't take drugs.
Right. Me either. And that really means that for me, when I think about this, you know, you're facing this heart to heart, mind to mind, love to love. And I want to just make sure everybody knows one. First of all, for those of you, the book that we're talking about, and certainly if you're on Facebook, you're going to see images of the cover as a reason to be. It is a novel, but it's much more than that. And I will say that. I mean, as reading this now several times, you are clearly immersed, not just in the landscape of things, but in the emotional ride of things. So when Norman talks to you about love has a way of surprising you, you don't just read it, you feel it. That's what's so beautiful about this. And if you want to find out more about Norman, you can go to Norman's website. You can go to normanmcombs.com. That's MCCOMBS.com. Norman, in reading this again, I know these interviews are so short, but I am struck by every aspect of the energy of love throughout the book. Whether you're talking to us, and I love the fact that you went back and looked at your ancestry. I love that. You know, it's a beautifully written book, but there is an energy and a thread of love in everything you wrote here. How did this experience crack open your heart?
Very difficult question. It was a very slow process. It's a trite saying, but it's day by day survival. You have to remember to drink. You have to remember to eat. You know, I had to remember to bathe. You just don't. Nothing. Everything becomes trivial, Pat.
Yep.
You know, I used to be highly claustrophobic, and once I went through all this, I'm not claustrophobic anymore. That these neuroses that people have, I'm not belittling them, but in the end, they become trivial things when you're really faced with clinical depression, and you're faced with the loss of a loved one that you see, you know, leaving you slowly, day by day. So everything becomes trivial. And so I've changed in that regard. And I give that advice as often as I can, you know, that people don't worry about the trivial things in life, you know, sort them out, get to the things that mean something. And that's typically other human beings that are in your life. Mm. If you truly love them, show that you love them, not just use to throw the words at them. But do things that make them happy. Don't people get in this habit of pushing the wrong buttons? You know that they know is going to antagonize another human being. But push the right buttons. You know, don't head in the direction of conflict. Oh, you know, be sensitive to the feelings of others. And that goes not just in marriage, but in any relationship. You know, to me. I was always a fast mover, and I like to think always fair, but I was very goal-oriented, and and Grace and I didn't have children, so it made life, well, I regret that deeply. It made life easier for us because we could do anything we wanted. We could go anywhere we wanted and take advantage of opportunities, not only for pleasure in travel, but also in business. So we were very, very deeply involved with one another, but we were very different. She thought I should be, instead of wasting my time in science, I was supposed to be a writer and a sculptor. I'll make money at that. So it's still hobbies of mine, but the writing part of it is a new thing for me.
And it doesn't seem new. It doesn't seem new. I mean, the way you've scripted this book, this is beautiful. You know, Norman, one of the things was I came across a picture of you and Grace. And it was at the Buffalo Alum magazine. Right?
University of I think the one you're referring to is on, it's on YouTube. If people want to just go to Norman McCombs on YouTube, they'll see it. Mm-hmm. There's a bit they did about me for the White House. And in that, there's a photo of Grace and I standing.
Sitting on the bench. There's one.
We're sitting on a bench, but
and
also.
And you're kissing her hand.
Yeah.
That's the one I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Because.
There are others. I did a sculpture of her. Mm. Oh. University of Buffalo. Mm-hmm. They wanted to name a particular part of the property after me. And it was a plaza, big garden area that joined all of the engineering buildings. I thought it'd be appropriate for it to be named after me. And I don't like that. I don't like being a billboard. But I said, it's okay. But you can name it Grace Plaza.
There you go.
And they... little bit of conflict about that. So,
well, tell them to call
things,
me.
But they allowed it, and so it's called Grace Plaza. Mm-hmm. And then I said, well, I want to have a bust of her there, and so they finally allowed that to just usually just allow busts of old dead generals and all like. But there's a little in Grace Plaza. There's a bust of her. A beautiful piece of granite, just her name on it, and the words, my love, my life, my inspiration, then that's it. So that's unfortunately right now I can't go back there.
No,
not,
I know.
Not that I'm drawn by it because I love Western New York. I love the greenery. I'm in the desert right now. I don't know if I'll ever accommodate to this, but I miss the springtime. I miss the fall in Western New York. And first place I head when I go there is over to the University of Buffalo. Mm-hmm. So UB has meant a lot in my life, and now I'm out in Henderson, in Nevada, and I've become involved with University of Nevada in Las Vegas, and they sort of absorbed me as part of their family, and I'm very grateful that too. It keeps me active with young people. I really love to mentor young people.
I know. I'm with you on that. Norman, I can't thank you enough. I posted this picture now because I really do believe that you represent every aspect of the energy of love, and I want to thank you for coming back for this follow-up interview. Thank you so much for today. And I've sent people over to your website to follow your journey, as well as Amazon to get the book. Thank you so much for coming back. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Pat, for having me. I really appreciate it. And it's so great to speak to someone like you that understands, that gets it. You know what I mean? People have to, it's something you're trying to get across to people.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.